Hi, this is Mimi, and welcome to my podcast, The Lovely Becoming. Today's guest is Ruthie Lindsay, who's an incredible author and speaker, and I'm so excited to have you on. Hi, Ruthie.
Hi, sister. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to get to spend this time with you today and get to know you, and this will be such a treat.
Thank you for agreeing to be on. This is such a gift to me, and I'm so excited for more people to hear about you, hopefully.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm very honored. I'm really appreciative.
So tell us about yourself. What do you do? What do you love?
Oh, gosh. Well, my name is Ruthie Lindsay. I live in Nashville. I mean, there's a lot of doing parts of me that aren't really who I am, but it's what I get to do. I get to speak. I get to write a book. I get to sit across from precious souls and reflect how worthy and good and beautiful and whole they are. I don't like to call it coaching because that doesn't really fit. I like to call myself a midwife of souls. I'm like, I'm here to help you remember who you truly are and unlearn the stories of brokenness and something's wrong with you and remember how what's so right with you and how worthy and good and deserving we are. And so I get to do that. I get to share a lot in workshops and, I mean, used to be pre-COVID, a lot of retreats and things. But I get to talk a lot about the invitation of pain, the invitation of trauma. I have a crazy story. Like most of us have a lot of stories, you know, and a lot of trauma and a lot of loss. And mine's definitely one of those. And I was pretty parked in that story for a long time of a lot of loss. And I was in a lot of debilitating chronic pain, physical pain, emotional pain, spiritual pain, lived in my bed for 7 years because of it. And was very identified with that story. And I really love that version of me because she was a part of my journey of coming home to myself. But I mean, who I believe I truly am is, and who I believe we all truly are, is just, we are light. We're these eternal beings that are so deserving of love and belonging. We already belong. We are light. We are worthiness. We are goodness. We are beauty and wholeness. And yeah, that's my essence. That's your essence. That's all of our essence, right? And I guess, yeah, that's a bit of who I am. I'm a dog mom who has the most amazing dog named Sissy Spacek that ever existed on planet Earth that I am so in love with. She is my little Buddha. She gives me everything I need to know about presence and consciousness and being in the present moment and joy and love and quite a sweet journey. And I really love my life. I really love the work that I get to do. I really love my friends. I'm just really grateful. And it's a beautiful, it's a sweet thing to be able to sit in this chair today and to look at you and say that from the depths of my soul and believe that, because I really hated my life for a long time. And I hated my body and I wanted to die. And I thought if I died, everyone's life would be better and my life would be a lot better because I felt so trapped in my life and inside of my body. And so I think there's hope for all of us if there's hope for me, because I could not have been further from this place. And it doesn't mean that there's not hard things and there's not, I mean, hello, Earth School. We all have hard things in our lives, but it's all the things that brought me home and remember into my body. And I feel really grateful and really blessed. I love my little world.
I love that so much. It is so tender and compassionate. And I think that's what we all need a lot more of.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I agree. We're pretty ugly to ourselves and to others because we're so mean to ourselves. You know, we have a lot of pretty mean limiting stories that we're breathing in by our culture, by the patriarchal culture, by our families, by our church, by the systems that we live in, and telling us that something's inherently wrong with us and we need to fix ourselves and we're messed up and broke. I mean, I was a part of a church that said I was a broken, depraved wretch and my flesh was sinful. My heart was deceitful. My sexuality was sinful, you know, all these things, just stories. And just because we know them by heart just doesn't mean that they're true. And we're kind of walking around in this trance and believing a lot of pretty effed up limiting stories. And so I think our work is unlearning those and remembering what's always been real and always been true. And it's the sweetest journey we can go on.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about unlearning the stories around church and what that looked like for you and felt like viscerally.
Yeah. Well, you know, I love one of my favorite teachers, and he's been one of my teachers, is Richard Rohr. And he talks about the journey is order, disorder, reorder. And some people in this life might not leave order, but it's a progressive journey. And again, we have free will. So everyone might not move from one place to the next, but you can't jump from order to reorder. So order is like the very black and white. And that's like the church that I grew up in. It's like, you're good or you're bad. You're in or you're out. You're going to heaven or you're going to hell. It's a very black or white. There's no nuance. It's very dualistic and it's very masculine. And it's very, let me put you in this box. Let's put God in this box to keep you safe. And they're a lot of beautiful people, right? It's not bad people. It's just limiting. And it's, I was taught, gay was sinful. Women couldn't preach. We're inherently broken, that original sin, all these things, a lot of stories. And the next step on that journey is disorder. And that would be like the deconstruction phase. And everyone doesn't leave order. Again, like, I have precious family members that might not ever leave order, and they are perfect. They're perfect. But disorder would be deconstruction. That's when your world kind of falls apart. And a lot of those things we were taught don't necessarily fit anymore. And for me, I grew up, I wanted to be a really good girl. I did everything that I was told. I didn't drink. I didn't smoke. I didn't have sex. I didn't cuss. I thought all my worth and all my goodness was, if you hadn't noticed yet, I grew up in the South with my accent, and all of my identity was what everyone else outside of me said. And all I wanted was to be accepted and be told I was good. And because I didn't know I was inherently already so good, right? When I'd walk in the front door, I'd hear, what'd they say about you today? They say how pretty you were. What'd they say about your outfit? Everything was about what others said. And that's how I found my worth and my identity. And if they didn't say something or they thought something was ugly, then, oh God, my world shattered because all of my identity was in what everyone else believed about me. So I learned how to wear a lot of masks to be acceptable. I learned how to do all the things, and, I wasn't allowed to have certain feelings. We didn't know how to process, and they weren't bad people. They just didn't know how to. So, I got whippings. Like if I showed anger or rage, I got a little whipping, spanking on the ass. Like I wasn't allowed to have that. And those feelings don't go away just because we're told, to push them down or to cut them off. Of course, they're still there. They usually just come out sideways or they end up driving the bus. And like, I know, about internal family systems. And so when my world fell apart in my 20s, well, before that, I was in a really terrible car accident, broke my neck, died, had a 5% chance to live, 1% chance to walk. Years later, the wire from my fusion broke and pierced my brainstem. And I'm the only human in the world that's ever had that. And my dad passed away right after we found out about the wire in my brain. He was my hero. A marriage fell apart. I mean, a lot of my world just really imploded. And I'd done all the things I'd been told to do. And then here I was with this really effed up, just despairingly traumatic life. And the God, the very much white Jesus that I'd been taught about didn't fit for me anymore. And I'm like, F him. Like, I don't want to be a part of anything that I was taught. This feels really bad. And none of this feels true. And none of this feels good. And that's part of the deconstruction process, is when what you left doesn't fit anymore, because And it's actually loving. It feels really bad. It feels really scary. It felt really traumatizing. Everything I knew to be true all of a sudden didn't feel true anymore. So then what's actually true? Like, who the F am I if I'm not these things, right? So I stayed parked in deconstruction for a good long time. And some people might not leave deconstruction, and that's their journey and they're perfect, right? And they might not in this life. And deconstruction is an important part of the journey. It's like unlearning, that's unfoiling. And something beautiful about uncoiling, unlearning, unwrapping a lot of these stories is then the next step is you get to rewrap what does fit. You get to step into what does feel true for you. If that doesn't feel true, okay, then what does? Like when I realized that, you know, I went to this place called OnSite and I wasn't allowed to tell anyone, it's this emotional wellness place, and I couldn't tell anyone what I did for a living. And I remember it felt like the biggest mindfuck you could ever imagine, because all of a sudden I'm like, if I'm not this trauma story, because that people be like, what do you do? I'm a speaker. What do you speak about? I share my story. And then I could give them this elevator pitch of I'm the only human in the world and I shouldn't be alive and and I'd get these responses of like, wow, you're so strong. You're so brave. I can't believe you're standing. There's a reason you're, and it puffed up my sweet little precious human ego. And it made me feel worthy and like I deserve to sit at the table. And I do have something to offer. I am so special. And, you know, when I couldn't tell people those things, I'm like, hello, who the F am I? I'm not this job and I'm not this story and I'm not this trauma. Who the fuck am I? And that felt really traumatizing. It sounds ridiculous, but that's how it felt to me. It was this identity crisis. And again, if I'm not those things, then I get to step into, then what am I? Who am I? And that became an entry point of me remembering of like, wow, I am love because I exist. I am worthy and deserving and good and whole. And I was never broken. Effed up things happened. My essence, my beingness, never broken. Can't be broken. That's just pure love essence. That's our soul. That's who we're, the witness. We're the ones experiencing, like watching all these things happening, right? That part of us cannot be broken. And that's who our true identity is. And pain gifted me that. I'm telling you, if my world had not imploded and exploded, I would be the sweetest little basic bitch you've ever met. I would not have questioned anything ever. I just wanted to be good. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. Whatever you say. Yes, sir. Right? Because that's what I was taught. I was very polite. I smiled. Like I was at home, stuffing my face until I felt like I was going to die of food because I didn't know how to deal with my emotions and pushing them down. But no one knew. I would show up and I'd smile and I'd be pretty and pleasant and kind and sweet. And I was just suffering in silence alone. That just didn't fit anymore. And so learning to be able to feel my feelings, learning how to be in my body, even in the reconstruction phase, I had a lot of knowledge about healing. I could talk. I mean, I had two counselors tell me I didn't need to come back. And I'm like, hello, ma'am. I am not well. What do you mean I'm good? Like, I'm not good. I am not okay. But what was I knew so much. I knew I could talk to you about the mind-body connection. I could talk to you about trauma. I could talk to you. I mean, I had so much head knowledge, but I left my body so early on to survive and I was completely disassociated. And so for me, learning how to go from just head knowledge, I heard a shaman that I work with say, knowledge is just a rumor until it goes into the muscle. Unless we go into our body, unless we learn to embody these things, this is where our wisdom is held in these precious bodies that my body I thought hated me, thought was broken. She's just been loving me and holding me and calling me home all this time. And like got really loud and in a lot of pain because she's calling me back in to tell me something's going on that needed my attention, needed my communion with her, right? She needed me. And she was loving me and she was tight and squeezing me because she was like trying to hug me and take care of me and protect me because I was in pain. And I think when I learned how to go from this head knowledge into body wisdom, where all of our traumas held, like I came in this human form, in this human body, I can't heal, I can't talk or think myself out of trauma, right? My body is what's holding all of this trauma, all of this emotion. I thought all my trauma was physical. Sweet girl. But learning how to become in my body has been this beautiful step in the reorder. And the more I come into my body, the more I come into the wisdom of embodiment, the more I remember I'm connected to all beings, all things, these flowers, your precious face, this dog, this tree, all human, like we're all, it brings me back into my oneness with all, there is no separation. And that's what reorder brings you into, that I had to go through order. I had to go through disorder to get to reorder. And I think that place, that oneness, that embodiment is the greatest act of resistance on freaking planet Earth, because I can't believe there's an other. If I'm in my body and knowing that I'm connected to all beings, that if you suffer, I suffer, I can't believe there's an other. The patriarchal system is a lot of very disembodied people that might have gone to Ivy League schools, have a lot of head knowledge, but there's not that wisdom, right? And the wisdom of our bodies, like our bodies don't lie to us. I can't believe that there is an other when I'm in my body. And that's just been the most precious, that's the gift that trauma and pain has given me. That's what she's invited me into. And I don't know why Earth School set up this way, but I know that it's loving. I know that it's what my soul needed for growth, for expansion. Karmically, it's what I, you know, it's what I needed to grow the way that I came here to grow. And again, if my life had turned out the way that I planned, I wouldn't have gone in. I wouldn't have done this excavating, this unlearning, this remembering. And oh, what a precious place it is. Like I mean this from the depths of my soul. Like I wouldn't change one thing. I wouldn't wish this trauma, right? Like it's been really fucking hard. And I know that it was my journey to come back home, to remember and to bring me back into consciousness, to bring me back into the present moment, to bring me back into the remembering of how divinely created, how healing is my birthright. How love and light that they, I am those things. I don't have to go out and find them because they are me, right? And that journey, oh, what a gift, what an honor, what a privilege. I wouldn't trade that. Like the return investment on pain for me, holy hell. Like she's given me so much more than just this physical, emotional pain ever could in my present experience. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes. I'm soaking it in and just really grateful. I think the word that resonates with me the most is wholeness, and that we are already whole and don't need to add or change to get that.
Yeah. And I think that journey is accepting all of our parts. You know, I kind of what I touched on earlier, I talk about this with my clients a lot. Like I'm looking at my dining table and it's a bit of like shadow work and internal family systems, but realizing that all of my parts get to be here. Those parts that I was taught were disgusting or shameful or needed to be hidden or weren't, you know, avoided or given to God because that's dirty and not something like, listen, I have cheated. I've lied. I've stolen. I've used people, hurt people. I have abused narcotics. I mean, name it. Those are all seats at this table, as are real empathy and joy and beauty and goodness. And the more I learned to sit with those parts that I was taught are not okay, that need to be cut off, the more I sit with jealousy or sit with, you know, that part of me that's used people and sit and I inquire about them. I love Tara Brach's Rain. When I recognize them, I accept them, I inquire, I feel them in my body, and I ask questions of what they need, what nurturing they need, right? These parts want to be loved. They want to be seen. They want to be communed with. They want to know that they're cared for. And the more I do that, I watch this like alchemic transmutation thing happen where all of a sudden those parts aren't driving anymore. They're not the head of the table. Love, the part of me that's like, I'm going to take care of you, and you are so needed and loved and cared for, and how you feel matters, and we can be with you and dance with you. And the more I've learned to accept all of those parts of me and see myself as so very, am I a bad person because those are in me? No, I'm just human, right? I'm just human. Do they define me? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's my humanness. It's our sweet little egos here trying to protect us. And, you know, traumatized people traumatize people. And when those traumas get to be loved and nurtured and held and cared for, they're not in the unconscious anymore. My favorite Carl Jung, I'm going to probably say it a little wrong, quote is, until the unconscious becomes conscious, we'll have the same results over and over and call it fate. Those parts are driving. Those shadow parts that we try to deny and avoid and push down start driving, right? And they come out sideways. And it's why people cheat on their spouses, because they're told their sexuality is dirty or bad. Or it's why a gay man marries a woman. And it's, you know, because they're told that they're bad and this is dirty. And so, of course, that doesn't go away. It's their humanness. This is how they were created, right? Like, that doesn't go away. It just wants to be loved and nurtured and accepted. And the more I accept all of my parts and allow them to be here, the more I can accept your parts and everyone I encounter. I tell my clients all the time, I'm like, listen, you could tell me right now the thing you feel the most shame about. You're like, no one can ever, ever know this. No one can know this, or I will be kicked out from my life, from my world. Like, you tell me that right now, and I will look at you and say, I love that part of you. That part of you gets to have a seat at this table. Oh, let's love on that part of you. That part of you gets to be here, right? And I can only do that because I'm learning to really do that for me. I couldn't do that if I didn't accept my parts. I was the most judgmental, and this is in me, the most critical. Now, you wouldn't know, I'll smile at you real big. Just judging the shit out of people. And I was, because I was judging the shit out of me, so critical of me, so mean to me. That's why hurt people, you know, but also awaken people and enlighten people, enlighten people. And the more we do this loving work, excavating that we're so deserving of, the more we can go out and be a mirror of that love and that wholeness, as you speak of. I mean, the more we can be the fullest expression of ourselves and that freedom, and remembering that it's none of our effing business how anyone, listen, my ego cares what other people think. She loves to think that, like, my worth is, you know, defined by what you think of me. And then I get to remind myself, oh, Ruthie, it's none of your business what they think. I matter because I exist. What you think of me is none of my fucking business. It's just not. It is none of my business. And the more I step into that, the more I get to mirror that for others. And that's freedom, right? It's freeing. So yeah, it's such a fun, I mean, Earth School is crazy. It's such a roller coaster, and it's beautiful, and it's painful, and it's traumatic, and it's enlightening. And it's all the in-betweens, and it's subtle, and it's disastrous, and holy hell, it's just all over the place, but it's the human experience, and there's nothing that hasn't been felt before, hasn't been seen before, hadn't been expressed before. We're not alone, right? Anything that you think is like, no one can know this, I can guarantee you, everyone knows what that is. Like, most of us have that exact feeling, know that feeling, have that thought, have that struggle. Like, it's just human. It's called being human.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I think when we honor those parts of ourselves that are so filled with shame, there's so much healing that happens there. And they stop taking the seat, like you said. Like, I think the more we repress them and suppress them and push them down, the more attention they want and the more attention they need.
That's right. And they grow bigger. I mean, they say it on site, when our responses to things are hysterical, they're always historical. It's just old pain, old trauma, old hurts that's just longing to be witnessed and communed with and loved on and felt. You can't heal what you don't let yourself feel, right? I mean, the issues in the tissues. Like, I mean, we know this, but unless you actually go in and sit with yourself and be in your body and feel what you're feeling, this is all real new for me. And it's been like the most expansive, profound experiences of my whole life, coming back into my body and being able to hear from her and listen to her and listen to her needs and her wants and her desires. And oh my gosh, it's so powerful. I'm like, holy shit, I'm in heaven. It's the sweetest thing ever.
Oh my gracious, I'm obsessed. So there's this beautiful moment in your book, which I recommend everybody reads. And you wrote, "Nobody told us about our bodies, how powerful they are, that they can demand things. All they told us in school and church was not to listen to them if they spoke." Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious how your views on your body and you've kind of touched on this, but intimacy and pleasure have changed.
Oh my God, there's no compare. I mean, if there's as far the opposite extreme of what I was taught is how it's changed. I mean, realizing that my body is good and whole and beautiful. It happened this morning. So of course I haven't talked about it yet. I had a moment this morning. I do tea ceremony every morning. That's a part of my daily ritual and it's my meditation. And I had this visual this morning that it was the most precious. I saw myself as a teenager. I used to stand in front of the mirror, my pants down, staring at my body, just hating my body and despising it and just disgusted by my body and, you know, thinking how bad and gross and undeserving and unbeautiful and all the stories. And I saw this happening. And then I saw me, who I am today, me and maybe it was my higher self, I don't know, on the other side of the mirror with my guides, with Jesus and with Mother Mary and with my dad and all these light workers that are always with me, standing, staring back at her and telling her the truest stories I know, that she is so, I was like making eye contact with her and telling her how beautiful she is and how worthy and how good, and her sexuality is so beautiful and deserving and worthy. And, you know, when I was a child, like I thought like masturbation was the dirtiest, most evil thing. So of course I still did it, but I hid it and felt shame like you wouldn't believe. And I married my first boyfriend 10 months after I met him, because I felt guilty about having sex, because I thought that was dirty and bad and evil and it's going to go to hell and all these freaking stories. And I was just, we were looking at her and just speaking the most loving, truest things I know of how good, how so good and worthy and beautiful and whole and needed and perfectly created, and how pleasure was her birthright. And we just went on and on. And then I literally saw myself take her hand and pull her into the arm on the other side of the mirror in the armoire. And I was just holding her and like swaying with her and rocking her and just speaking the truest things. "I will never leave you, you perfect girl. I love you so much. You are so precious and beautiful and worthy and good and deserving," and just speaking everything that I needed to hear that I was not taught. My mom hated her body, hated. Still been on a diet her whole life, you know, and I wasn't shown that. I wasn't taught that. And she's perfect. She just didn't know. And so I get to give me that. And my precious little limbic brain that doesn't know time doesn't know that's not exactly how it happened, right? And like, that's so beautiful. Like realizing that sexuality. And I mean, the least surprising thing to me is when I hear of a pastor cheating on his wife. And I don't have any judgment for it, because I'm like, that's the most human thing. When you try to deny your sexuality and try to cut it off as dirty or bad, of course it's going to drive. Of course you're going to cheat. Of course that shadow part's going to come out, right? Not to say if you just witness it and acknowledge it and let it come to have a seat at the table with you, right? Then you're not going to feel the desire to go out and cheat, because you're allowing it to have a seat at the table and allowing it to be a part of you. Of course, you're still going to be attracted to other humans because you're human. People are fucking beautiful, right? That's like the most human thing. It doesn't mean you have to act on it. If you embrace it, you talk about it, you bring it up and dance with that part of you, it doesn't drive. And yeah, that part of me, I mean, I had kissed a few boys before I got married to my first boyfriend, and I never slept in a bed with another man. When we got divorced, I mean, I'd never dated. Everything was brand new, it was a process of unlearning a lot of those things, you know, and there's still parts that I get to unlearn that it's the air we breathe in this patriarchal culture. That's, you know, we have to look a certain way. We have to be desirable, to be lovable, to be good, to be worthy. And it's so human to get caught up in that. And so it's like, how do we get off that hamster wheel and realize that unconscious thought is happening and it's driving, to bring consciousness to bear and be like, oh, Ruthie, you're so human. Oh, body, I'm so sorry. I just lied about you. Like, oh, you're perfect. But yeah, learning to be in relationship and dating and navigating my body and letting others be with me that I trust, and exploring sexuality and sensuality. It's been the most precious, beautiful, profound. I thought I hated sex. I hated it. I was so cut off emotionally. I was so cut off from my emotions. I was so cut off from that part of me that I was told was dirty and bad, and my body was bad. And so learning to unlearn that. And I mean, I had this beautiful experience one time. I used to tell people it was while I was meditating, but I was definitely on mushrooms. And I was doing a mushroom journey for medicine, like as a ceremony. And my body said to me, like, how would you treat me if I were your lover? And I was like, I just started bawling, crying. So I was like, oh, I would stop lying to you. I would stop listening to the lies I've been told about you. I would speak such love to you. Be so kind, gentle and tender and compassionate and empathetic to you. I would listen to you. I would feed you the most nourishing foods that you desire. I would cook for you and dance with you and sing with you and go on road trips with you and go spend time in Mother Nature with you and massage you and make such beautiful love to you. Like, I get to give me that. And my body, I mean, this is science. Dr. Hillary McBride taught me that. I was like, whoa, that my body doesn't know the difference in my words and my hands and a lover's words and hands. So I can literally say all the words that I wish a lover would say to me, like, Ruthie, I will never leave you. You are so beautiful. You are so perfect and delicious and funny and so fun to be with. And I love getting to know you. And I get to speak all those things to myself, to my cells, to my body, to my heart, to my mind. And my body doesn't know that that's not a lover. Like, that's so, the same hormone is released. Like, that's the coolest shit. It sounds so woo-woo, but it's science. So I'm here. And your mind will say it's not true, right? And you won't believe you, and that's okay. That's why it's a practice. That's why I practice it daily, because I forget all the time and I could say really mean things to myself. And I just get to practice coming back in and reminding myself of the truth. But that experience on mushrooms, like, it was the truest thing I know. I mean, this body is the only thing I'll actually own in this life. The only thing I'll ever own in this life. And I have abandon her most of it. And I love that part of me. Like, that was a part of my journey and that was my survival part. And it served me until it didn't anymore. And now freaking love being in my body and listening to her and communing with her and dancing with her and remembering she's a she, right? She's not an it. She's not something to be fixed. She's something to be communed with. And that journey has just been the most profound journey thus far in my life.
That's so beautiful. And the part about embodiment and finding home in our bodies is so precious.
Mm-hmm. It is. And we're all so deserving of it. This is not mine. This is not you. This is ours. This is for everyone. And I think that's also the beautiful part about the healing journey is the more we come home to ourselves and do this work on our own and in our bodies, the more we can go out and be that mirror of what is for everyone. Like, this is, again, it's not mine. This is ours. Like, this healing is for everyone. This love, this goodness, it's already yours. And that's just helping reflect back that truth that we forget. We have amnesia. We're walking around in a trance state and believing a lot of lies about ourselves, of unworthiness, that we are, something's inherently wrong with us, right? And yeah, man, and that's so, it's such a devastating space. I know it very intimately, and it's devastating.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh my gracious. I'm so filled up and grateful. And a question I like to ask everybody as we wrap up a little bit is, how are you becoming?
Well, to kind of go back to what we were saying earlier about the unlearning, I feel like my becoming is an unbecoming. It's unbecoming all the stories that we're taught by the patriarchal system, by culture, by the church, by the families, by a lot of well-meaning people. It's unbecoming those stories. And my becoming is my remembering of my essence. And that looks like daily work. I mean, that's daily, because I forget every day. And that's so human. Hello, that's so human. But I get to become conscious of it and start being conscious of my thoughts and be like, oh, there's that old story again. Oh, that's so human. Like, I'm so sorry. I just lied about you again, body, or I just lied about you, Ruthie. You're so precious. My becoming is filled. It's like this big, giant hug of tenderness and love and compassion and acceptance and self-forgiveness. It's like my becoming, one of my practices, I love the word no too, but my practice right now is saying yes to what is in the moment. So if I'm feeling pain, I have some pretty intense pain in my fallopian tube right now, and I just sit with her and I'll say, yes, I accept you. What do you need from me? How can I love you? What message do you have for me? And not trying to resist that it's there, not trying to fight it, not trying to push it down, not trying to avoid it, not trying to numb it. It's saying yes to what is. And so that's a part of my becoming, is yes to what's right in front of me, yes to the present moment, yes to what is. And that does not mean that, it's a tricky thing to kind of try to explain, because sometimes my yes is really strong boundaries and moonwalking the fuck out of there. Like, that could be my yes of taking care of me. But my yes to me right now is removing myself, right? That can be my yes. But yeah, just learning to be with me, learning to fall in love with me, learning to really like me, learning to be okay when I'm not okay. Learning to be present with myself, that those are all pieces of my becoming. And this is a lifelong journey. I mean, I'm sure a year from now, I'll look back on this version of me and be like, oh my gosh, That precious girl, she thought she knew shit. You know, like we're just, I am a freaking fetus. I want to be a lifelong learner and student and constantly unbecoming and constantly becoming until the day that I go back to the in-between and leave this precious body. That is my intent in Earth School.
I love that. I am so grateful for your time and so grateful for your voice in this world. And I'm amazed that I get to talk to you.
Oh, thank you, sister. Well, I'm so honored I get to talk to you and get to know you and experience you. And there's no one I would rather be sitting across from on planet Earth in this moment, you precious soul. So thank you for sharing this space with me and showing up the way you do. And really proud of you. You're doing such a beautiful job and beautiful work. And it's so fun to follow along and to see the excavating and the unlearning and the remembering that you're doing. It's really beautiful.